Today on Straight Talk Africa, it's about the African immigrant in search of socio-economic greener pastures. Why have more than a million Africans left for Europe, America, and elsewhere since 2010? And what do you think should happen to stop the exodus and reverse the flow? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, and I'll be your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion about the African immigrants searching for socio-economic opportunities away from their homeland.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We're going to reveal some of them just ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
Tens of thousands of African migrants and refugees leave their homelands each day. My colleague Paul Sisco tells us why.
Italy's new Prime Minister, Giuseppe Conte, condemned the killing of a Malian migrant over the weekend. Soumaya Sacco was killed earlier in a shooting incident that also injured two other Malian migrants. Mamadou Gassama, Mali's Spider-Man, was on the way to becoming a French citizen within hours of his life-saving heroics. 28-year-old Majid Majid, a Somali refugee, is the first Muslim and youngest ever Lord Mayor for Sheffield City in England. He was sworn in last month, becoming the first Green Party mayor in the United Kingdom. And VOA's investigative unit helped break the tragic story of Mukhtar Diallo. In 2016, the teenager came to New York City from Guinea in search of a better life. He worked as a garbage person and wound up crushed under the wheels of a sanitation salvage truck on November 7, 2017. His co-workers said their dead colleague was a homeless person. The police took them at their word, and Diallo was buried quietly by his family. Our VOA investigations uncovered a plethora of misdeeds by the sanitation salvage company and by corrupt city officials. Other New York officials have since opened and reopened investigations into the workers' union, the sanitation company, and the death of Mukhtar Diallo, who some claim was treated like trash. But it is the Mali Spider-Man that prompted today's broadcast. A migrant from the troubled former French colony in Northwest Africa who journeyed through Burkina Faso, Niger, and Libya before making the dangerous Mediterranean crossing to Italy, arriving in France last September without papers. A journey not unlike those of thousands of others from sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, and elsewhere, all seeking a better future. On May 29th, Gassama met with French President Emmanuel Macron, who invited him to become a French citizen. At least a million sub-Saharan Africans have migrated to Europe since 2010, and the flow continues. They're all seeking better lives. Those that survive the often perilous journey generally do eventually find better lives in Europe and the West. Many thousands have also died seeking better lives, and too few are asking, what has to change to slow, end, and reverse the migration of those in search of a better future? Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us now are two distinguished guests. Nigisti Ghebreyesus, manager, Queen of Sheba DC restaurant, based in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. And Professor Fola Sholemekun, author of American Boy, a life inspired by American ideals and founder of Highlands Education International, Gembu Taraba State in Nigeria. I have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The US country code is 1. Let me come back to you immediately, Nigisti Ghebreyesus, and you tell me that that actually means servant of Jesus.
Yes.
In Tigrinya?
Yes, in the girls' language anyway, the Ethiopian language.
You mean Amhara?
Yeah, we use the Bible language as the girls' language, which we all have one common things in there.
Interesting. Tell us, what was it like coming to North America, crossing the Atlantic? Why did you leave your country when you did?
Yeah, when this was late in the 70s, and I had to flee the country with my aunt because it was a lot of civil war in my town, in Tigray, and the whole Ethiopia. So we had to flee the country for survival, actually.
And your first port of call was where? Was it Sudan or was it somewhere else?
Yeah, from Ethiopia, we immigrated to Sudan, from Sudan to Canada, and then to the United States.
To the United States. Mm-hmm. And you are now back home.
Now I'm back home. The whole family are back home.
Because there is no war.
Yeah, I mean, it's a better life. We believe it's better for us and it's better for our kids. So we decided to move the kids there so they can have their own, you know, they can be introduced to their culture and their everything about Egypt anyways.
Interesting. Now, Fola, you belong to another generation.
Yes.
You first came here, at least according to your book, back in 1956.
Yes, 1956, yeah.
And you came to do what?
I came to study.
Why didn't you go to Ibadan?
At that time, Ibadan was the only university in Nigeria, and there are thousands of us who want to go to college, and we couldn't go. And for you to go to Ibadan, it's a quota. They won't tell you, but it's a quota. For example, I had a grade one.
Yes.
In West African.
Cambridge.
Cambridge. I mean, it was very good. And I felt that, hey, I ought to move forward, you know. And so I decided to find a way to live.
Fola, you come from Abeokuta.
Yes, Abeokuta.
Yeah. Ogun State.
Ogun State, yes.
Tell me, there are a lot of very prominent people that have at one time or another called Abeokuta home. Yes. What is in the soil of Abeokuta?
Nothing special, really. It's just that in the history of Nigeria, the missions, Christian missions, who brought enlightenment to us, they were forced there in 1842. So, but the people also accepted, our people at that time, they accepted, because they too were refugees. You know, we had 100 years of Yoruba civil wars, and the Egba people who were from Abeokuta, they were fed up with the war, and they bolted from the arena of war and came to found Abeokuta. So they know what it meant to be refugees, and they knew what they wanted.
You know, so. But surely these missionaries must also have been in Lagos.
Well, you see, the thing, Lagos and, you see, and people who were in Lagos were also in Abeokuta. A lot of them were involved in slave trade.
Very interesting.
And they kept, they got to know that it is great to accept other people to come and meet them. So they accepted the Sierra Leoneans, you know, the ones who were freed by the British. Yeah, the Creole, they accepted them. Those ones brought education and on and on like that. So there's nothing special in the land of Abeokuta.
There must be something very uniquely special there, because you're talking about, for example, the families of Wore Soyinka.
Yes.
You're talking about his cousins, Ramsom Kuti.
Kuti, yeah.
You're talking about Farah.
Yes.
Anakulipo Kuti.
Yes.
And I'm told that Farah's mother was probably the first person actually to drive a car or something.
Yeah. She was. And this woman was just phenomenal. I mean, she drove our king out of the throne.
How did she do that?
Because, you know, in those days, the British used to farm out the tax system. So she was against the way people were being taxed, and so she just said, no, we're not going to allow it. So she organized the women, and the women got after the Oba, and the Oba was forced to flee.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's also the home, of course, of the late married billionaire Mashruda Biora?
Yes. Yeah, he's from Ota. Yeah.
You're talking about General Olusegun Obasanjo?
Yes. Yes. So it's just that foundation, I think, and the importance that education is important and the welcoming of new ideas. That is the issue.
And you're talking, of course, about Fola, your father himself, in fact, was educated. He was a secondary school teacher at that time.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And he went Forabe in Sierra Leone. What happened?
Well, when my father go to Forabe, he dropped like a mango every time because he failed his exam. You see, this is a man who was already 42 years old, has a large family. You know, and you know, his mind was always at home, and, you know, so he failed. But in his day, when he was like in his 20s, I mean, he was good.
Fuller, you come here in 1956. You go to college in the Midwest.
Yes.
You complete your degree.
Yeah.
Your country gets independence.
Yes.
You could have been anything that you wanted.
Well,
but you hung out here. Got several other degrees, including, of course, a doctorate in philosophy from the prestigious Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois.
Yeah. Well, you see, education means so much that I simply felt that I got to go the highest I could.
At that time. At that time, in a lot of countries, even the secondary school, my friend, was very, very significant.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, what you say is true. But each individual have their own, you know, thing that motivate them. You know, in my family, you know, for example, you know, my uncle, you know, inspired us.
He had been to the UK.
He had been through the UK, you know, my you know, so it just the individual taste. This is what I felt that I want to do. I want to be well educated. I want to be a professor, whatever. But that was it.
Tell us about a little bit about your family. In fact, talking about your family, you say that you produced about five doctors with a clinic.
Yes.
In your family?
In the family, yes. There may be even more that I don't know about. But the real issue is simply that they took education very seriously. You know, in those days, if you go for education, for a degree, and you didn't make it, when you return home, it's a shame. It's like you have disgraced the family. You see? So that motivation, I think, bring these people to be what they are. My father used me in the family as an example. When you read The American Boy in the beginning, you will see that there was nothing that would predict that I would ever do anything. I was just horrible.
What do you mean you were horrible? You got a first class Cambridge Overseas School Certificate. My friend, how many people actually even used to pass Cambridge School Certificate?
Yeah, but the point is, my beginning was very difficult. I'm sure for everybody.
You didn't seem to know what you wanted, because I remember when you were looking for a visa, you were being asked, what is going to be your major? And you didn't seem to know.
I didn't know.
Why?
Just wanted to go to America. I just wanted to go to America, you know. But as in most cases, I felt guided, led, and the word just came from my mouth, history. And that was it.
Now, you talk about how you were attracted to America because of what you call American ideals.
Yes.
Were they ideals or values or some aspects of its culture or something?
Everything like that.
But you're talking about movies, for example, Hollywood.
Yeah,
the George Wayne type of people.
You know what used to happen throughout the world. You will find a lot of young people, like myself at that time, they are attracted by these things. Hollywood, you know, you might say, well, they are attracted by it because it's very exciting. You know, so you just think of that.
And the music.
And the music, the jazz, and the singers, and whatever.
I was pretty much actually, I think, inspired by some of those things, actually. Before pausing for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming live on Facebook. To watch our show, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and don't forget to share it with your friends. We are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA African Migrants, and we will air some of your comments later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizu Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, servant of Jesus. What about you? How was it like, for example, when you stayed briefly in Sudan? Was that Khartoum?
No, first it was Gadarif. It's a little bit town from Khartoum. Mm-hmm. So I grew up there, typically African style town. Mm-hmm. So we had to. I grew up there, and I went until third grade to school there. But it was not an easy town to live in. It was tough. You have to make your own. You have to create some business to feed your family. My aunt, she was a single mom.
You did some business.
My mom. My aunt, who I call my mom.
From the little I know about Ethiopia, you are not a Guragi. Guragi people are supposed to be very, very advanced in business.
I don't know. Of course, they are very active in business, but all type of Ethiopians are into businesses.
And then you go to Canada.
Yeah.
What takes you to Canada? What are the forces that pulled you to Canada?
For a better life. I mean, living in that, it was an Ethiopian community, what the Sudanese gave for the Ethiopians. Mm-hmm. It's not like you cannot really be somebody there. You cannot grow. You cannot keep going to school. So we had to ask asylum to come to Canada. Yeah.
And which province did you go to?
Toronto.
You go to Toronto?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Eh?
Yeah.
Ontario?
Toronto, Ontario.
And so what do you do in Toronto?
So I went to school there, mm-hmm. and as I told you, my level of school in Sudan was very low. Mm-hmm. So high school, adult high school, and then a business college in Sudan.
What was it like to integrate into that society? Very different culture?
Oh, it was very hard to adapt in the beginning because it was very cold. We come from a hot country. And suddenly you are
in Your country is not particularly hot like Nigeria. Your country is also somewhat cold.
The Ethiopian weather actually is very nice, but in Sudan, the region we were in, it was very hot.
Okay.
Very hot, yeah. Mm-hmm. So suddenly we came to the negative temperatures, so it was very difficult. And then when we were walking outside, we were sliding.
Wow.
And, you have so much things going on because of the cold.
On ice.
Mm-hmm.
On ice. So what about the interaction with the people and what have you? Did you feel like you are welcomed or did you experience some problems there?
Of course, Canadians are very nice people and there are a lot of immigrants, But it's very hard to learn the language. English was, I didn't speak English at all. So we had to learn step by step. So we had to learn a lot of things when we are living there, but in the end it was good.
Mm-hmm. And then when you finished studying, what did you do?
When I finished college, not long after that, I moved here.
You moved to the United States?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had a very wonderful restaurant. Was it on 9th Street or something?
Yeah, 9th and P.
Queen of Sheba.
Yep.
I remember I used to be one of your clients.
Yes, we...
How did you do that?
By going to a business school, I always wanted my own business. I mentioned in the previous show here. And at the same time, my husband was very supportive. So we had to open it together.
And you did some other things besides the restaurants?
Yeah, and also with my friend, we have a cleaning business, a janitorial service, and landscaping. Yeah.
So did it pay very well?
Which, the restaurant or the both
of them?
The
businesses,
Oh, yeah, well, very
you
well.
You must have
I'm
deep
very
pockets,
happy.
Very deep pockets,
I don't know about that one. But it's fine.
And so you eventually now went back?
Yeah.
To Addis Ababa, to Ethiopia?
Yeah.
How is it like to be back home after so many years in
exactly.
a different society?
For me, I didn't even grow up there, so it's a new thing for me. But my husband, his name is Mbza, and he grew up there when he left in his 20s. So even for him, it was a new adjustment. But we talked about it. We visited the country a few times before we moved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great opportunity, actually, right now, in my opinion.
So what other businesses do you do besides the restaurant in Addis Ababa?
In Addis, so far, it's just because I just moved. My husband moved September. And my kids moved last June.
Mm-hmm.
So I just moved about January I moved to Addis.
To Addis Ababa.
So I was, looking what's the government offers, what's in there. There's so much opportunity.
Really?
And the Ethiopian government offers a lot of opportunity. It says that it gives you 80% if you come with the idea. Mostly they want manufacturing and agriculture. So, and there's women's... for women, a lot of opportunity they can help you with. So I was just looking at those kind of stuff. I don't have a great amount of money just to go and open a manufacturing, but the system is there to help you.
So next time, in fact, you might be telling us about your own factory or something.
Maybe, you never know.
So tell us about the restaurant now in Addis Ababa. What is it called again?
It's called Queen of Sheba DC Restaurant.
Why do you call it Queen of Sheba DC when in fact you are in Addis Ababa?
Because we have a lot of clients just like you who we've been here in the US for about 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we want them when they actually we have a lot of people when they drive by and see Queen of Sheba DC and they stop just to say, is that them or not?
Really?
It's attracting customers, I guess, in a way.
How has it, for example, drawn traction? Do people Many people come to your restaurant, perhaps because, in fact, there is something a little bit exotic about it, DC?
Yeah, it's really nice. We have a lot of people who come and support us from Ethiopia, and we have a lot of people who, the diaspora, coming. By us being there, they find their friends there. Sometimes, because we just move from here, the people who live in Ethiopia might think it's a little bit expensive or. But it's a fair price restaurant, and we have everything, music.
Mm-hmm.
We have a big space that you can even do a small wedding there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What about the cuisine? Is it the same like you used to do here? Or?
Yeah, even better, actually. We have all type of Ethiopian food, and we have a lot of items that is Western foods.
So diplomats from different countries and whatever,
yeah,
can also... come to your restaurant.
Yep.
So what about people? Don't they ask you, why did you come back or what? Because some of these people think that being in America is probably a little bit better than being in Addis Ababa.
Yeah, people ask, and how did we make this kind of big decision? Especially we have teenager girls who from here suddenly they move to Ethiopia. But, it's time to move for us, and it's the right age. And, we're able to work, and we can work with our people. And the Ethiopian people are very hardworking people. So it's a welcoming thing for us.
Have your girls blended in very easily?
Yeah, they're trying. I mean, it's they're raised in America, and just sudden move, it was a little bit tough for them, but they're adapting, they're learning the culture and all that.
So what do you say to those people who feel and think that there are greener pastures elsewhere, somewhere else other than Ethiopia, and you have a lot of people who live in so many different countries in the Middle East, in Europe, in North America?
So my advice to them?
Yeah.
Well, first you have to be physically, emotionally, and financially ready. I mean, by emotion, you cannot just go and move from, America is almost a perfect country, you can say, to move to your country if you're not stable. I mean, you have to be ready to adapt your own country that you forget for a long time. And for me, Ethiopia is really, it's not, I always say, if the Oriental people can live there, if the Caucasian people can live there, why not me? I'm from there, so it's easier for me even to live there.
It's very interesting. You know, I was thinking about you and Fola belongs to different generations.
Yeah.
You came in a plane.
Yes.
He came in a ship.
Yeah, in a freighter.
How was it like to come from America in a ship?
You just moving all, at sea. That was it. Wow. And it took a long time. It took almost 3.5 weeks or something.
3.5 weeks.
From Lagos to
your
Baltimore.
Your was Baltimore, you said.
Baltimore,
that?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. But I enjoy it, you know. You can get anything you want to eat there. Yeah, you get, in those days, they usually have about, maybe still two today, I don't know. You usually have about 12 places for passengers. Mm-hmm. So, I asked for all kinds of things. First time I had goat cheese, because I'm on board of a ship. And then apple, first time I was eating apple. And since that time, I've been eating apple almost every day, except for these days when I sort of relax a little bit. But, I like it very much, That's what I had at the time. If you were going to fly, it was almost virtually impossible at that time. Very difficult. We could do it, but it was difficult. But that's what we had.
Difficult? What do you mean? Was it inaccessible? Very expensive?
Very expensive, yeah. I couldn't afford it. I mean, by boat, it's easy because, those boats, many of them are going back with a lot of space left. So why not take this African boy or American boy, take them to America?
I suppose that was, the time when the British Empire was indeed the British Empire.
Of course
Where
it
the
was.
Sun never set. Mm-hmm. And they had this plane called BOAC.
BOAC.
British Overseas Airways Corporation.
Exactly. Hmm? They monopolized everything. Yeah, so that, and at that time, even I was also afraid of flying.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you not afraid about, going by ship for that long on a huge ocean?
No, I wasn't so much afraid because I know that ships always try to sail near the land so that maybe they'll quickly find a way to...
Now, wait a minute. How can you say near the land? I mean, you're crossing the Atlantic.
Yeah, you are right there. I remember one place when we were, I think, between America and Africa, where the captain told us, he said, if something were to happen to us here, nobody will ever see us again. And I was scared.
You know what happened to the Titanic?
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's how I came. Yeah.
Well, time happens not to be our best ally, and for that, you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizuyu, your words, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams-Peace-Patrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We've received excellent social media feedback this week. At least a million sub-Saharan Africans have migrated to Europe since 2010. Some have died in search of a better life outside their home country. Others have endured tremendous hardship and exploitation by human traffickers. And so this leads us to our question of the week, in which we asked, what can African governments do to curb migration flow out of their country? Let's start here with a tweet from Sophie Frank, who tweets, African governments should revisit their policies and come up with new ones which are inward-looking with the emphasis on youth development. Invest heavily in youth in terms of vocational skills and create an environment where youth can obtain loans through the government. We have another tweet here from Zetsin Newton, who tweets, African governments should focus on development in all aspects. When things go right, Africans won't move. And now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Ajao Babatunde from Nigeria. He writes, the one and only solution is good government. Good government translates to social security, good jobs and a high standard of living. Our leaders have to change their greedy and self-centered orientation for our common good. Let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Manny Kachele from Tanzania, who writes, African governments should end dictatorships and give people the freedom to practice democracy and make decisions for their own development. Give people civics education to stop voter ignorance so people can decide and get what they want. And our last Facebook comment comes from Moses Oboke Apuru from Uganda, who writes, African governments should boost the agricultural sector and ensure the formation of farmers' cooperatives to work with governments to better market agricultural produce. If this is done, the African economy will thrive. And as always, a reminder that we appreciate all of our audience feedback. So if you are a new fan, to drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And you can comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords here on your screen, Straight Talk Africa. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. You can also join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa. And do follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Of course, Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or you can simply go to VOA's Straight Talk Africa TV program page. That is on our website. And you can always watch us live on your mobile device. Download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what is ahead for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, in an effort to curb widespread anti-government protests, Ethiopian lawmakers have lifted a controversial three-month-old state of emergency. It's the most significant reform so far by the country's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, who has promised change. An in-depth look at what's next for the East African country on the next Straight Talk Africa. And that's where we'll leave it for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and your guests, of course, have a lot of social media comments to discuss, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Thanks, Heidi. And, of course, today we are talking about the African immigrants' search for socio-economic opportunities away from their native land. Our guest, Nigisti Ghebreyesus, manager, Queen of Sheba DC Restaurant, based in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, and Professor Fola Shoremekun, author of American Boy, a life inspired by American ideals and founder of Highlands Education International in Gembu, Taraba State in Nigeria. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
I'm humbled too. Thank you for having me again, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, we're very pleased. I'm very pleased, very happy to be here. and just to be able to chat with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, to tell you, to be honest with you, the feeling is mutual.
Okay.
Since we last met in Westwood.
Yes, Westwood. Yeah, in California.
You said that I had just graduated with a PhD from UCLA.
From UCLA, yeah.
And we met on a bus.
On the bus.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
You're talking about 1988.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The expense of revealing our ages.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, tell me, what do you think leaders in Africa are not doing that they need to do in order to help stop this exodus about our people going overseas, really, to look for greener pastures when Africa is not poor? Yeah. A lot of continents are getting rich precisely because they are getting raw materials from Africa.
Yes, yeah. Well, I was listening to some of the talk, and I noticed that, in reality, good government is
good governance.
Whatever way we define it, our problems in Africa, tribalism, when you are in a member of a tribe, you are in a cult.
But when a tribesman or tribeswoman steals funds or is corrupt, is he stealing for the tribe?
That's a very good question that you've asked. It is very incisive, because the issue simply is this. Instead of, it's just stealing for himself, because many of these people, they don't even take care of their families. In Nigeria, we have people who steal funds and put it in the tank on top of their house.
Precisely.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. They are just confused people. I have my idea that perhaps virtually all our leaders should go and sit before psychiatrists to analyze them. Because how could a man or woman, take millions? Doesn't know that you can create business or help people?
Create jobs?
Create jobs? There's something wrong.
They invest overseas?
Exactly.
They buy houses in Potomac?
Exactly.
Eh?
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
In Hempstead, London?
Yep.
In Beverly Hills, California?
California, yeah.
And that translates into jobs in those countries?
In those countries, yes.
We talk about China. Uh-huh. China is becoming incredibly rich.
Yep.
Incredibly powerful. It has the second largest economy.
Yeah.
But guess where it gets that rich or that kind of wealth?
From us in Africa.
Precisely.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So what's wrong with us?
Is that there is some confusion there. We have not yet, our leaders have not yet, described honestly what they wanted. If you ask them, what kind of society do you want? I doubt whether you will find any of them being able to tell you. I mean, look at what Mo Ibrahim has been trying to do. Okay, for several years, many times, he couldn't even give the prize away.
Talk about the Mo Ibrahim Prize for good governance.
Yeah. He couldn't give, except, well, this year, it went to
Ellen Johnson
Sirleaf. Yeah. But why should there be a gap? We should have good leaders because it is necessary. People look up to them to do a whole lot of things to make their life better for their people.
Some African presidents have actually told him, he told me himself, that they don't think he is actually serious because they are in a position where they can make that money in a, simply in a day.
Hmm.
That they are not poor.
Well, what can they do? What can we do to get serious to so many other issues? There should be immediate issues and remote issues. But the key is good governance. Good governance means objectives should be clear. What do you want for your people? What do you want them to be? Okay. And if you have people as representatives from various areas,
mm-hmm.
those people should be made responsible. For example, if I come from County A, the people of that county should say, what have you done for us? Have you brought road to us? Have you brought market to us? Have you, you know, they don't do it. What tends to happen is that they will cheer for the rascal from their county. Because, yeah, he's our rascal.
He becomes a hero.
He becomes a hero, which is confusion.
Now, tell me, you have a lot of rulers. They call them, some call them leaders.
Yeah.
Who basically are talking about building infrastructure.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But what should really be the priority, really? Is it the infrastructure first, or is it education, really?
Education, to me, is the key. Maybe I'm biased because of who I am, being an educator. You know, we have a school in Taraba, you know, high.
It's probably a justified bias.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to hear that.
You cross the oceans actually to come and look for education.
Yeah.
But up to today, despite the flag of political independence that most African countries have experienced, they don't have quality education for their own people, including your own country, Nigeria.
You are right. Yeah, you are right. And the level of education now was worse, in my estimation now, than it was at that time.
Really?
When I left.
It's very interesting because in your book, in fact, you say that you actually came back with your wife to America because you wanted your daughters to have unfettered access to good education.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Why can't we do it at home? You have established a school.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about Highlands Education International.
Well, Highlands Education International is a non-profit. Okay. We started this school after we had visited Taraba State, you know, Mambila Plateau, as it's called.
As a tourist.
As a tourist, you know, school was out at Ife.
Right.
Myself and my wife were teaching at Ife. Mm. I would say, okay, let's go and see.
Mm.
Because somebody wrote an article. I think the governor of that state, at that time it was called Gongola State. I'm sure you're familiar.
Yeah.
So he wrote that that area can feed the whole of West Africa.
It can feed.
That's what he wrote. So I said, here come another liar, you know. Let's go and see. So we got up in our Volkswagen, myself and including the lady who
you
brought me.
You always like Volkswagens. Why do you like Volkswagens, the Beetle? You had the Volkswagen when you were teaching at the University of Zambia in Osaka, correct?
Yes, I did. Because I found it, it doesn't fail you. I mean, for the most part, it doesn't fail you.
It's the Beetle? Was it the Beetle?
It's the Beetle. It was the Beetle. Anyway, let me continue. So then we said, let us go and see. So we got in our car. We went. Places we were actually going, we couldn't even find road, just tracks. We asked people, where is this? And they would say, okay, just go that. We were just going. Yeah, and we just kept going. And it was, you know, when you are younger, I think you take risks.
Yes.
Sometimes you are foolish.
Indeed,
and sometimes, you know. So that's what brought us there. And when we got there, we realized that it would be a good place for education. The climate is temperate, average 70, 72.
It's temperate?
Around. Yes,
so it's temperate. Like Kavari, actually, in southwestern Uganda, where I come from, or in your country.
Yeah.
Very high altitude.
Very high altitude. So we went there. And then, of course, what has happened is that we discovered the level of education was very bad. You know, we're still struggling with it now. Now, so we decided, talk it out, talk to people about it. We became crazy about it, looking for funds, how it is. Not easy to do some of these things. And we wound out using our own funds to start with. For example, a lot of my money and my wife's money went into this.
Yeah, we that's decided, what you say in American Boy.
Yeah. Well, we decided we're going to do this, because what's the point when you see people that are suffering, you have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if your conscience says, do something and you don't do it, you will suffer later on. So we're doing it for our own sake. Not for their sake, but just that we have to do it.
But someone might tell you, wait a minute, that seems to be very, very far from Abeokuta.
It is very far. I'm not from there. I didn't even speak the language over there. you know. And, you know, I think part of this came from what I learned from my father.
I see.
Yeah, my father.
Well,
yeah.
You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our conversation, please call us at 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away because we'll be right back with you.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African Beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiyuwat. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. First of all, I have to really apologize to you, Fola, because I had to interject because there is no democracy in Studio 47.
Mm.
If
okay.
you are told by your producer to go for a break, okay. just like a good soldier on a parade square, you have to go.
Okay.
So I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Nigerian heart. Forgive
okay.
me for that.
Okay, I forgive.
Pick up from where you left, please.
Okay, let me take. So we just decided that we are going to do this. So we started to do it in the sense that we got land.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got land, we
How did
then,
you get land? Was it donated?
Oh, well, the land, you know, you have to. We visited the area.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone many times, really. And the problem is that each time we travel, come back to the state, you know, back and forth, costs us $10,000. So we
And who pays for that?
We, ourselves. We took our meager funds.
But you have also had some help from churches and what have you, that kind of stuff, at least according to your book.
But that's going to come a little bit more later. The first time, though, that we were looking for land, we had to go by ourselves to talk to the local government people, and they showed off, they took us around, they said, what do we like? And then, you know, and then they coached us how to write our letter to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and we did it. We didn't even realize what was going to happen because, I mean, we are school teachers. We don't have any money. We met their council and we talked to them. We said, we want to start a school here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be happy for you to give us land. Now, and this is very important, we don't give bribes because we need the money to do what we need to do.
Someone might say, is that humanly possible in Nigeria?
Well, as far as we are concerned, for what we... It happened. Because since I don't know what made us to make the statement, nobody ever came expecting a penny from us from the time when we were, because we refused. We are not going to give anything to anybody.
You say the police seemed to have a difference to you because they thought that you were quote-unquote missionaries or something like that in your book.
The ones
that have roadblocks and all kind of stuff.
Well, you see, the issue there is simply that one just needed to explain oneself, you know, because the area where we are, you have this Muslim, Christian
kind of thing.
So, but we play our...
But you also seem to have some connections in here in terms of Oga Pata Pata.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we were looking for land, we went to Obasanjo.
Mm-hmm. There you are.
In Otta.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no.
So we left. We felt, you know, what is the waste of our time?
But he has visited your school. I saw a picture with Obasanjo at your school.
That is after many, many years of labor, of hard work, and so forth. I honor him, you believe, for helping us, but we didn't know. You know, but then it happened. Maybe he just wanted us to make effort, but we are school teachers. We expect other Nigerians to join us. We didn't see them. We still don't see them.
So how many students do you have there?
We have 400 students now.
At what levels?
Oh, primary? From preschool, elementary, and high school. You know, our high school, very, very few people, because the children who joined us at that point, you know, came from families that saw us starting with preschool and said, why don't you, you know, help our boys or girls? So we took them.
And it's a boarding school, correct?
No.
It's a day school.
It is a day school for now, because the resources we need are just so vast. We have 150 acres of land.
150 acres of land.
Yeah. We have potentials for a lot of things.
How do you pay the teachers?
Uh-huh. That is the thing. A lot of the question of paying the teachers, part of it, a lot of it comes from some of our own funds, my own retirement funds.
Really?
It is as a tremendous sacrifice that we are running that school. We have no money. We want people to support us.
What about the state government?
The state government, we didn't go there. We couldn't even reach these people.
Nigerian governors are very, very rich individually.
But, you know, if you're going to be waiting on them, and besides, you will get nothing. And the issue there is this. Okay. Will they not come back to you later, bringing some useless person and say, you know, this is my cousin, employ him. We don't want to get money from anybody who is going to try to use us later. We want people who will give us. If a governor were to come to me and to say, okay, I'm governor so-and-so, we will not take his money. But if he says, I am Mr. So-and-so, I want to support the school, I will take the money.
Let me go back to the other question I asked you earlier, which is, you come from Abeokuta.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people in Abeokuta who think that you are a traitor. Because let's face it, you go to that place, that is very far away.
It is.
In fact, there are some people, at least in your book, who regard that area as a foreign country, as foreign territory.
Yes, you are right. But you see, here I take my own stand as an individual. Because I do what I believe is right, myself and my wife. In Abeokuta, they are well served. They are very fortunate. And they eagerly sought and accepted education. So I think they should take pride in the fact that I went there to this other part of our country where I don't even speak the language to say, this man, I'm working there to help our country. It is a labor of love for the people there and for the country. So I welcome support from anybody. So I don't take that criticism that, okay, you're for it. Okay, fine. I am a person, I made my own decision. We made our own decision. We suffered the consequences because there was actually no support. Of course, we have tax-exempt status now, you know. But it is our basic decision to raise the standard of education. My father did the same thing years back, and it's a source of inspiration to me.
Fola, if you could put your fingers on it.
Yeah.
What would you say is the single most important decision that you made during your lifetime and the single most regrettable decision so far?
Well, the most single important decision is to come to America to study. As for the whole question of regret, I'm still alive. I don't yet know what the regrets will be. I'm still alive, so I still have, I don't believe in 70. I'm now almost 84.
Interesting, you don't look it.
Oh, well, thank God, know? Yeah, so I have no regret. I'm happy to have come to America, to have imbibed many of these great ideas, and to know that you just don't live for yourself. You live for others. And I discovered that, you know, if
you really live for yourself, you will lose. But if you live for others, fine. In the work we are doing, we have faced a lot of disappointment. But we know we are doing it not necessarily for them, but for the country and for higher concerns. That's why we are doing it.
You have also had really an opportunity to put back to Africa.
Yes.
You taught in Zambia.
Yes.
University of Zambia.
Yeah.
For how many years? Seven years.
I helped to open the University of Zambia. I was one of the first staff that were there.
It's an enormous, campus, beautiful campus. Well, I was there last year. We held actually a town hall meeting over there.
Okay.
And then I gather that you went all over the place. You went to national parks.
I was all over the place. Huh? I was. I guess that's just my life, and I enjoy my life. It's not easy.
You taught at Ile Ife University.
Yes.
Now it is Aworo University, is it?
Yes, it is.
For 11 years?
For 11 years, yes. Yes.
Very interesting. And you worked very briefly with Civil Aviation Authority and what have you.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Do you have any particular remorse about your life?
No. You know what? I'm so happy that I pray that, no remorse whatsoever, because what happens is that a person should be able to look back at their life and to say, I have tried something. I don't give bribes. I treat people fairly. I do the best I can.
What about you, servant of Jesus? Single most important decision that you have made during your life, and single most regrettable decision so far?
Oh, my greatest decision is moving back to my country.
Really?
Yes. I know my daughters are born here. They are American. They can come anytime to be American, but this is the only few years that we have to make them that they have a second country that where their dad and mom come from. And as doctor was saying, they can have the heart and willing to help themselves and their people of Ethiopia, and they can be good people.
What is the difference psychologically when you are walking the streets of Addis Ababa as opposed to walking the streets of Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, where some of the decisions that affect all of us globally are made?
There when you walk, it's so busy. It's crowded. You see things up and down. You see a lot of buildings and stuff like that. When you come here, it's quiet. But I find it so interesting because, I like to walk. When I walk in Addis, it's so many things happen. Everybody's running and for their work, and busy people.
I see. Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Negesti Gebreyesus and Professor Fola Sholemokun, thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.